Case number 20-5928, Jacob Clark et al. Versus Bernadette Stone et al. Oral argument is not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Wiest for the appellants.
Good morning, Mr. Wiest.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, I have the privilege of representing Jacob and Janetta Clark on this case involving their interactions with members of the Kentucky Children, the Cabinet for Health and Family Services, and specifically the CPS, Child Protective Services. And I'd like to argue four issues. Obviously, there's more in the brief this morning, but the Fourth Amendment searches of the home in this case, the retaliation recording, the hostility to religion, and then generally the procedural errors in the handling of this case and the motions below by the district court that sort of intertwine in those issues. Your Honor, I want to begin with the Fourth Amendment search issue, and I want to start with the district court orders that were entered in this case that led to those home searches. The quote, parents must cooperate with CHFS, comma, they must let CHFS in their home. And on January 28, 2019, the plaintiffs taped the Fourth Amendment to their door. They told the defendants that they were not consenting to the search. They did not, to the searches, they did not have a warrant and they could not enter. And nevertheless, the defendants proceeded into the home. The district court below held that that there was not clearly established case law that prevented that. And the problem in the analysis that the district court engaged in part, and they relied on a Tennessee district court case, the Barnett case that made the same error, was the district court failed to recognize that Andrews versus Hickman County and Kovacic versus Cuyahoga County Department of Children and Family Services did two things. It is true that both of those cases held that there was no clearly established right for CPS workers to enter the home without a warrant. But those cases also established the right that required the warrant to be, in place. And here the district court held there was no valid warrant. We agree with that holding. Obviously, that holding is consistent with the United States Supreme Court's decision in Grove versus Ramirez that, the orders in this case failed to describe what was going to be searched, the scope of the search, and so there was no valid warrant. The district court held there was no warrant. But again, there was this error that got committed because Andrews and Kovacic established the right going forward that a warrant was required, and here there was none. And nevertheless—
right, Mr. Weiss, did your clients consent to the workers entering their home?
They did not, Your Honor, and I realize that the appellees made that argument. My clients posted the Fourth Amendment to their door, told them they could not enter. There was a threat that happened in terms of taking the children if they didn't let them in. And Mr. Clark's testimony, which was in the verified complaint and what was pled, was that he did not consent and that when he opened the door, he was doing so under, quote, duress and coercion. That was the words he used. And they then followed him into the home.
He allowed them to come in the house. But you say his consent was by duress, though. Is that the position? Because he did end up allowing them to come in, did he not?
Your Honor, he opened the door, and what I would suggest that the court look at in part is the Andrews case, where again, just because you open the door, he never said you guys can come in. He never said.
Did he say you cannot come in?
He did. He said, "I do not consent to you entering my home," and they. They persisted. They threatened him with taking the kids. And he said, "Look, I'm not allowing you to come in. I'm going to open the door under, quote, duress and coercion." And they don't.
OK, I'm going to open the door under duress and coercion and you may come in.
He did not say you may come in.
OK. All right. And I think you do have consent. I guess you're arguing that the consent was by duress. But I need you to accurately state the facts to us. That's. Right. Rather
Your
than
Honor, he never said, "I consent to you coming in." What he said
I know he didn't say it, but okay.
Well, Your Honor, he said the opposite. He said, "You cannot come in. I do not consent. I do not consent to you coming in. You don't have a warrant. You can't enter." That's a paragraph 63 of the complaint. He says
Didn't they say something like, "We have a court order. Here's the court order. If you don't like it, we'll go back to the judge." And didn't he say, respond something? I mean, tell me, you know the facts better than I do. Tell me the whole scenario here.
Your Honor, they did say they had a court order. He said, "That's not a valid warrant," back to them. He said, "You don't have my permission to come in." And if you come in, you're doing so under duress and coercion. And then he opens the door and they follow him in. At no point does he say, you can come in. You're more than welcome to come in. Or anything.
Did they
like
say,
that.
We'll go back. We'll go back to the judge if you don't think it's sufficient?
They threatened to take the kids away. They never said that they were going to go back and get a warrant or anything like that. And so
Mr. Weiss, just a question. I know that you say, and you've pointed to case law that says a warrant is required, but here the object of the officer's actions was not a search as in a drug search or something. It wasn't it more of an interview and an inspection? And in that case, why do you say that the judicial order was insufficient for this interview or this inspection?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would go back to this court's holdings in Andrews and Kovacic. And again, we have government agents entering the home, which is the height of Fourth Amendment protection. We have, you know, nothing describing the scope of what happened. And what actually happened once they were in is they did go through the home. They did go and inspect the home. They went through.
Hey, let me ask this. Let's assume that that we agree with you and that a warrant is required and that the warrant has to describe with specificity the thing to be searched and or seized. How would that scope have been? How should that scope have been described in this particular case?
Your Honor, a valid warrant in this case would have, one, involved probable cause, which the district court found, again, was not present here that even gave rise to that. But turning to the actual contents of what should have happened if they were going to go into the home, it should have described the home. It should have said, you know, in the home, you can do a cursory inspection to make sure the home is clean. You cannot go through drawers. It wouldn't have been anything like that. That would have defined the scope, would have defined the property address, and would have defined that they could have perhaps interviewed the children. That would have been perhaps valid, and that would have confined the government actors in their execution of those court orders in terms of what they were allowed to do and what they weren't. Instead of a blanket order that said, quote, parents must cooperate with CHFS, they must let CHFS in their home, which basically gives rise, if you think about it, Your Honor, to unfettered, searches of the home that don't, you know, even limit the number of times they can go in, don't limit the scope of what they can search. This is the sort of general warrants that the Fourth Amendment was designed to protect against at its heart when it was put into the Bill of Rights by the founders, was government agents entering the home with limitless abilities to go into every aspect of someone's home, which is the height of Fourth Amendment protection. And yet here, that's exactly what happened. And this court has been clear.
Well, they weren't allowed to go into houses they had without a court order. They at least had a court order.
They did, Your Honor. And by the way, in Groh versus Ramirez, the U.S. Supreme Court dealt with a warrant that failed to describe with particularity the things to be searched. They had a court order in Groh also, and yet the U.S. Supreme Court
Didn't the judge at one point tell your client if he didn't let him in, that hold him in contempt?
I think that did occur, Your Honor. But again, I think, you know, what is required here is a valid warrant, irrespective of what the court order is. I mean, one would suppose that any warrant
if you're a social worker and you're faced with maybe children being abused, and the judge tells the parents, let these people take a look around or you're going to be held in contempt. What else? What? And the judge has absolute immunity. What do you think a social worker ought to do in that case?
Your Honor, I think a social worker, this court has held in Kovacic and Andrews, that a social worker is on notice now that they need to have a warrant if you're entering the home over the...
You should tell the judge you can't do that, Judge.
I think he did that in the court proceedings. He told the judge that a warrant was required, and the judge said, I disagree with you. People don't have Fourth Amendment rights. And yes, proceedings was the context that came back in it from the judge.
So you can see that a warrant gives the person the authority of the court or the directive of the court to go in and search. And here the judge did an order that gave the social workers the authority to do certain acts. So they were acting under this judicial authority. I want to go quickly in the time you have remaining and ask you to tell me, with respect to your First Amendment free exercise claim, what are you claiming inhibited the appellant's ability to freely exercise their religion? And how does the law specifically burden their exercise of religion? Because it seems to me that's a strained argument.
Your Honor, my response is that the law prohibits, and Masterpiece Cake Shop is the most recent pronouncement of the U.S. Supreme Court on this point, prohibits hostility towards religion. And it is interesting when you look at the allegations that surround that claim is that the plaintiffs pled sincerely held religious beliefs, specifically regarding corporal punishment of paragraph 19. They pled that they informed the defendant of the belief at paragraph 39. And then paragraph 40, the defendant immediately, this is Stone, immediately responded by directing him to bring the children into CHFS and pled a systemic animus towards all of the actions, the home searches and everything, due to those beliefs at 67 and 82 of the complaint. And so when we look at the complaint and we look at the fact that our allegations are that everything, and it wasn't just our allegations, we got a whistleblower declaration that was put into the record as well.
Okay, you can slow down just a little bit because I have a follow-up question. So is it your contention that the ability to inflict corporal punishment on children is a fundamental tenet of the Christian faith?
It is, Your Honor. Spare the rod, spoil the child. That is part of my client's belief, sincerely held religious beliefs, and that's a paragraph 19 of the complaint. And again, we're talking about reasonable corporal punishment that is driving their beliefs. So, Your Honor, we do believe that all of their actions were colored by the religious belief and the hostility of the defendants towards that. We did plead that. Your Honors, I see that I'm out of time, and I am happy to address any other questions, or I can wait for a rebuttal.
Any further questions at this time, Judge Sir Heinrich?
No.
Judge Donald? No. All right, no. You'll have your 4 minutes. You'll have your 4 minutes rebuttal, Ms. Boyd. All right, let's hear from the appellee.
May it please the court. My name is Brent Irvin. I'm here for the appellees. And because our time is limited, I will briefly summarize our argument. And then if any of the panel have any specific concerns, I'll try to hone in on what the court is most interested in. First of all, the lower court correctly determined that there was no Article III jurisdiction with a specific ripe jurisdictional issue that would allow the plaintiffs to challenge this gatekeeper regulation. The regulation challenged is only a regulation that would have screened out this complaint from the get-go without any investigation by the social workers. And there was ample cause in this case to investigate, not only because of the corporal punishment, but because of the allegations that the school counselor made, which are quoted on page 6 of our appellee's brief. Certainly, even a person that's claiming a right to discipline children under the tenets of their faith would not agree that beating children with a back scratcher, a belt, leaving marks on the child, striking the child in the genitals is appropriate form of discipline. And that is what happened in this case. It's unlikely that these events will happen again, and so the claim for prospective injunctive relief was properly dismissed for lack of a justiciable controversy. Now I want to move on to the damage claims against the individual social workers. And I will start with the First Amendment claims, the free exercise of religion, and the alleged retaliation for videotaping. I would like to most importantly point out qualified immunity is appropriate, and this is not a good test case to decide whether a social worker should be allowed to be videotaped in their home. And the main reason is because this court has held that if you interview a child in the presence of a prospective abuser, that puts the child at physical risk if the parent later kills or abuses the child because child was interviewed in the presence of the parent, that can be sued under a substantive due process case claim that this court has held would make the social workers liable. So obviously you cannot be videotaping the children while they're being interviewed in the home, and that distinguishes this case from any other district court case or out-of-circuit police arrest case that the plaintiffs might rely upon. I do agree with this panel that the First Amendment claim is strained. The Supreme Court has never held that having a specific religious belief allows you to engage in criminal behavior. And this this child abuse statute is a generally applicable statute that applies to everyone, no matter your faith or not. if you cross the line and abuse a child, then social services obviously have a concern, and it could rise to a criminal case if the abuse is significant. So the First Amendment claims are just not valid. The substantive due process claim, the court has never held that the right of the parent to abuse children outweighs the state's interest in investigating claims of child abuse. And so the substantive due process claim fails. Certainly nothing happened here that would shock the conscience. But it's also significant that the party that imposed the no discipline order was not the social workers. It was the family court judge. At the very first court hearing, court did it sua sponte. This court can take judicial notice that it was the judge who imposed the no physical discipline. And this court has held many times that you cannot make the social workers vicariously liable for whatever the judge has imposed. So here we have the judge at the very first hearing ordering no discipline, which stayed in effect the entire time there was the juvenile case was proceeding. And that's what the plaintiffs complaining violated their substantive due process rights, the judge issuing a no discipline. And I would just add that it was a very appropriate thing for the judge to do that in light of the serious allegations that the child made about being hit with the belt while he was cowering in a fetal position and being lashed at with the parents teaming up with a back scratcher and a belt. So the substantive due process claim simply fails. It was not, the social workers cannot be vicariously liable for that judge entering that very appropriate order. So the claim that Mr. Weiss has focused on this morning is the Fourth Amendment claim, and I'll talk about that. Mr. Weiss has had the benefit that his client videotaped this encounter at the door, and he has not shared that with defense counsel. So I'm only going by what I know have happened from what the social worker said. We already know, and the court can take judicial notice, that when this was in district court, the judge instructed Mr. Clark in no uncertain terms that he was to let the social workers into the home and that they were going to look around. He assumed the house would be clean, which it was, and they would be allowed to interview the children. And Mr. Clark reluctantly agreed to that and promised that he would let the social workers come into the home. So we had a verbal order from the bench, which was crystal clear. Mr. Clark was in the courtroom. He understood the order. Yet when the social workers showed up at the door, he taped the Fourth Amendment to the door and basically dared them to come into the home. And contrary to what Mr. Weiss has said, the social workers did not threaten to take the children. The social workers told him, fine, we'll talk to the county attorney. That's the same assistant county attorney that was in court when the case had been heard before.
And I just asked Mr. Weiss what was the conversation, and he did not mention that. But that's from your clients?
My clients say they said, we will talk to the county attorney. It's assumed that the county attorney would then go back to court and talk to the judge, and Mr. Clark made it appropriate.
Do the plaintiffs dispute that statement was made?
The plaintiffs have just rested in their pleadings and claimed that it was coercion without really getting.
Okay. All right. I'll ask Mr. Weiss, but I don't appreciate a counsel's misrepresenting the record, because that's my understanding as well. At least that's what's in the record.
To be clear and fair to Mr. Weiss, because discovery wasn't taken, we don't have the benefit of the videotape that Mr. Clark made.
Okay. All right. But that's the unrebutted testimony. Okay. Tell me what else was said before they entered.
Well, they just said, fine, we'll go back and talk to the county attorney. And then I don't know if he just opened the door and let them in, or he said, fine, you can come in under protest. I don't know, but we think it was an implied consent, and they did come in.
No, well, not what you think. Tell me what the testimony shows.
Well, there wasn't any testimony, Your Honor, because we didn't take discovery.
Okay. All right. The statements from your clients, are they in form of affidavits, or what are they?
They are just statements they represented as best they could remember, and they don't have the videotape, but as best they remember, they said, fine, we'll talk to the county attorney.
Okay.
That's what said.
That's all right.
They told me, and I'm taking their word for it.
All right. Okay. Now, under qualified immunity protects all but the blatantly incompetent. unless a government official just blatantly violates the Constitution, and he should know that it's a violation of the Constitution that all reasonable officials would know under these circumstances. Unless that occurs, the official is entitled to qualified immunity. That's the standard, is it not?
Yes, sir.
So your position is they have a court order, they've got the opinion by the judge that they have a right to go in there. In addition, there appears to be some consent here as well, and that under qualified immunity analysis, they really can't be sued for this.
That's exactly our position, Your Honor. There's actually two arguments. One, under qualified immunity, just as you said, a reasonably competent social worker could believe that the district court order was valid. After all, this was not a criminal case. As Judge Donald mentioned, this is a different...
They don't have to go against the judge. They don't have to second-guess the judge, do they?
No, they don't. As a matter of fact, we've cited authority in our brief that if a social worker or a police officer follows a court order, executes a court order, sure, they have a type of derivative judicial immunity for following the court
order. Well, even if it were a criminal case, you'd have the good faith defense here. And this is not even a criminal case. So, I mean, this is even a higher standard than the criminal Fourth Amendment violation, under whether all reasonable officials would know that what they did was unconstitutional.
Yes, we think that's sufficient for this court, and that's what the lower court held when he followed the guidance of the district court opinion out of Tennessee, which this court has later affirmed under a different name. So that analysis, district court in Tennessee, which our court relied on, has been affirmed by this court, and there's no reason not to affirm it in this case. I would question, in the Fourth Amendment non-criminal context, where the touchstone of Fourth Amendment is reasonableness, why this family court judge order was insufficient anyway, because everybody knew who the children were. Everyone knew where the Clarks lived. They weren't being searched for contraband. All that the social workers did was walk through the house to make sure it was clean and interviewed the members of the family. So I'm not sure it really would put form over substance to say that this judge should have physically described each child, identified the home with greater specificity. There's no doubt that when Mr. Clark came to the door, they were at the correct place. I question whether those Fourth Amendment criminal cases even apply, but if they did apply, a reasonably competent social worker would have not known that, and therefore they would be entitled to qualified immunity, even if a different court later found that the family court orders were deficient in some manner. So we think that both absolute immunity for following the court order and qualified immunity because they reasonably relied on the order defeats the Fourth Amendment claim. Okay.
All right. The investigation here led to the charges being dismissed. So, I mean, there was at the end of it, there was a dismissal. They apparently have taken the position that because of their religious beliefs, that they will likely be investigated again and perhaps be charged again. And this is because of their religious beliefs and the animus against their religious beliefs. Now, what's wrong with that theory, if anything?
It's just a speculative theory that the Clarks have raised. Actually, they say they rarely spank their children or discipline them physically, and only as a last resort. And so it's very unlikely that they would strike the children in the same way in the future in such a manner that would lead to a second child abuse investigation. If one was reported and investigated, the county attorney would screen it, determine there was probable cause, and then it would have to go to a court that would have to determine if he wanted to impose another no discipline order. So the fact that they claim that they were chilled is really, they'll be chilled either way because the criminal statute still exists that makes child abuse a crime. And if they think they're going to cross the line into child abuse, then that's their what they're complaining about, not this gatekeeper regulation that the cabinet has promulgated to help the cabinet know which reports meet the criteria to even start an investigation. So, the case law does not say that someone that's a Christian is exempt from violating the criminal laws. I haven't heard Mr. Weiss say that his clients could beat or harm the children and be exempt from the criminal law. So I don't understand why he thinks they should be exempt from somebody screening a complaint if they later strike the children and spawn a new investigation.
So, Mr. Irvin, you're really saying, I think, that this reasonable fear expressed by the appellants is really an unreasonable fear because it would only be triggered by an allegation that they were violating the law by abusing children. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. The cabinet does not investigate parents unless there's a credible report of abuse or neglect that comes in and is screened. And before they can go to court, they have to get the county attorney to agree that there's sufficient cause to file a dependency, neglect, or abuse case. It's quite an unreasonable fear. And I'm not sure why the Clarks have this fear, because if you look at the entire history of the things that have happened to the Clark family in the past, they've never been criminally prosecuted for child abuse. Arguably, maybe they should have been looked into the past when Mr. Clark made allegations against Mrs. Clark, accusing her of drug abuse and harming the children. But for some reason, the Clarks have gotten by without really anything ever happening to them.
Well, Mr. Weiss says that that this prohibition against corporal punishment is rooted and grounded in the Bible. Spare the rod, spoil the child. What do you say about that? Is it spare the rod, spoil the child, but don't break the law? I mean, I want you to respond to it.
All right. I think reasonable parents and reasonable Christians can disagree or agree about corporal punishment. The Kentucky legislature says that parents have a right to use reasonable discipline on their children, which seems to be consistent with what the plaintiffs are saying. Whether or not it's a constitutional right or not, I don't think this court needs to decide, because as the lower court determined, certainly that right doesn't go so far as to allow you to abuse children. If the religion allowed parents to do anything they wanted in the name of religion, Chief Justice Scalia's opinion points out the parade of horribles that could happen. You could have child sacrifice. You could have children sold into slavery. You could defend anything based on scripture. If you want to go back to the Old Testament, you could defend on the Quran. You could chop criminals' hands off. Under our Constitution, these children have a right to be protected from their abusive parents. And sometimes that right prevails over a parent's religious belief that they want to hurt the child. Or I don't think Mr. Weiss would say his Clarks wanted to hurt the child. But if they cross the line and do hurt the child, they shouldn't expect that the Constitution gives them that right to hurt their children.
Okay. All right, Mr. Irvin, you're out of time. If you want to wrap it up, 30 seconds, you may.
Well, the lower court wrote an excellent opinion, and we would ask that it be affirmed. Thank you.
All right. Very good. All right, Mr. Weiss, you've got 4 minutes rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I wanted to begin with this notion that's been expressed this morning that somehow the Fourth Amendment standards are different between social workers and police. And this court has held that they are not. And Andrews versus Hickman County, 700 F3rd, and this is at page 863, quote, Fourth Amendment standards are the same, whether the state actor is a law enforcement actor or a social worker. So I wanted to begin with that concept and just refute it. And I wanted to next turn, Your Honor, to this notion that somehow this court order is carte blanche for the social workers to be able to search. And I would point to the Grove versus Ramirez case out of the U.S. Supreme Court, 540 U.S. 551. Again, we had a court order there. We had law enforcement executing a court order there. And yet what we had in that court order was a court order that failed to plainly address what was being searched. Now, everybody knew what was being searched in that case. Everybody knew where the police
officers were. But, Mr. Weiss, if you're saying that they're different or that the things are the same, why wouldn't the good faith exception apply there if that's your argument? And that's the question that Judge Griffin asked earlier. So why wouldn't they be entitled to the same good faith that that you would have in a criminal context?
Yes, Your Honor. Again, there is no good faith exception to a plainly invalid warrant, as the U.S. Supreme Court has held. And I'm right back to Grove versus Ramirez. And that case, I would suggest, is right on point with this case. In that case, there was a court order. And the police, went in a neighbor, executed
a warrant. One of the things that strikes me, the difference between the warrant and the court order, is your client was present in court. Usually warrants are obtained without the defendant being present or even with his knowledge. Does that make a difference?
We do not believe it does, Your Honor. And the reason, again, I'm right back to the U.S. Supreme Court and has never held that being present at the issuance of a court order somehow makes it okay. The question is, what does a court order say, and does it confine the execution?
It gives the defendant at least the right to say what the court order ought to say. He has a voice as to why it shouldn't be issued. So it's entirely, it just seems to me we can't avoid that and make a layperson liable.
Your Honor, I think the reason that the layperson is liable is that this court's case law has put them on notice that the Fourth Amendment standards are the same for law enforcement and social workers. That was Andrew. Kovacic versus Cuyahoga County Department of Children and Family Services put them on notice that a standing court order was not sufficient in terms of what was going to be searched. And so, you know, there again, we had a court order that the social workers were purporting to rely on. That was not sufficient for this court in Kovacic. And Grove versus Ramirez, which puts them on notice that if you're going into somebody's house over their objection, which was the case here, you have to have a warrant that describes with particularity the scope of the search. And again, that is to protect all parties.
They had a right in front of the judge to ask that.
They did ask for the warrant, Your Honor, and the judge said the Fourth Amendment didn't apply, contrary to this court's holding in Andrews. So, I look at this and I'm like, you know, the judge being plainly incompetent in terms of not following this court's
immunity, and you say the social worker that hears him say that can't rely on that.
I think the social worker cannot rely on it, Your Honor. If it, can a police officer rely on a warrant that violates Grove versus Ramirez? The U.S. Supreme Court has held no, you cannot. And so I think when we look at this,
she's the appellate court too.
What's that, Your Honor?
No.
Well, this court has also been clear that you have to have a warrant that plainly describes what's being searched in the scope of the search, and that is rooted in Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. It's to protect all parties. So, Your Honor, we do believe that the case law put these defendants on notice that what they were doing was plainly unconstitutional. Your Honors, for those reasons and those set forth in our brief, we would ask that this court reverse the district court. And in terms of the actual search, the reason that isn't in the record, and we do dispute everything that Mr. Urban said about that search, we got it on video, was because the district court never even allowed us to get into discovery and to insert that video into the record. So we think that short shrift that was given to this case warrants reversal as well. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. You say that never let you get into discovery. I mean, you had the video, right? You didn't have to discover your own video, did you?
No, Your Honor, but we didn't have we didn't believe that we had an obligation to put that necessarily into the record, given
isn't the law, once qualified immunity is raised by a defendant, the plaintiff has the burden to rebut qualified immunity? Isn't that the law?
It is, Your Honor, and here that.
So you did not rebut it by introducing the video you had.
Your Honor, we believe that the allegations, which again were taken right from the video, the allegations in the complaint were sufficient to do that. And we did that via declarations from my client that authenticated and swore to the entirety of the complaint, which again is refuted by the contentions of Mr. Urban and his clients. There's an issue of fact there at a minimum, but you know that was done as was the additional declaration by the whistleblower. So
okay, you keep also referring to a search. I thought they were going to interview the kids. Sure. Were they searching something too?
They were also searching the home, Your Honor. They were going through the home. They were inspecting the home.
All right. Very good. All right. Any further questions, Judge Sir Heinrich, Judge Donald?
No.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will be submitted. You may call the next case.